Hello, everybody. Good afternoon or good morning, I guess, depending on what part of the country you're in. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it. My name is Mike Gibb. Excuse me. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on how to prepare for income tax season, which is being brought to you by Solutions by Text. It's that time of year again. Income tax season is right around the corner, and for the credit collection industry, it's the busiest time of the year. Now is when companies need to make sure they've put their plans in place to be ready when the calendar turns to January and everyone starts talking about income tax returns. In this webinar, sponsored by Solutions by Text, we've got a panel of leading executives from across the ARM industry who are here to share their insights and tips to make sure you're ready for income tax season. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of emails, newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope everyone can take a few minutes every day and check out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Mark Boych is the operations manager at JP Recovery Services and has accumulated 18 years of leadership experience in the accounts receivable management industry at national firms such as OSI Collections, Transworld Systems, AMO Recoveries, and Asset Acceptance Capital Corp. Since starting at JP Recovery Services in January 2011, Mark has advanced into his current role of operations manager, where he is responsible for the strategic and day-to-day production of services. In addition to being a certified Lean Six Sigma Black Belt, Mark is currently pursuing his MBA at Case Western Reserve University's Weatherhead School of Management. Mark is a 2016 Ontario Systems Hall of Fame Award recipient for innovation. Also joining us today is Kelly Parsons O'Brien, the president of Pacific Credit Services, which is formerly known as Credit Bureau Associates. Kelly is a third generation debt collector and has worked for the family business for 26 years. She has a passion for collections. She has spent most of her career working with the collections department and helping collectors reach their best potential. The format for today's webinar is going to be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we will get to them as the discussion is ongoing and when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please hit the Q&A button on your Zoom webinar control panel, type in your question, and hit submit so that we can see it. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available later today or tomorrow on the webinar recordings page on AccountsRecovery.net. Finally, I want to ask everyone to reserve a minute to fill out the feedback survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over today. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Your participation and your feedback helps me develop the content that is what you're looking for, such as the topic we have for you today, and to make sure we have the speakers you want to hear from, which is definitely the case with the pair we have with us today. With that, let's jump into today's discussion. Let me ask you a hopefully fairly obvious question that I hope I know the answer to, because if the answer is no, then we don't need a webinar today. But is tax season that big of a deal? You know, maybe provide some, you know, how much more does an agency collect during tax season than the rest of the year? Mark, why don't you kick us off?
Excellent. Well, good morning, good afternoon, everybody, and happy holidays to everybody. Tax season is definitely still relevant for bad debt. I would say that our recoveries per month have increased anywhere. It depends. Last season seemed to be a little bit leaner than in previous years, but our recoveries have increased anywhere from 10 to 18% during tax season by month. So tax season is still pretty big for us.
Awesome. Excellent. Kelly?
Yeah, I'd agree. Sorry, my mute was on. Good morning, afternoon, everyone. So I would agree that we're right in about that sweet spot, about 10 to 18%. And I think when I looked at this question, I thought about the fact that, like, there's some years that we do like a full-on tax settlement campaign. And we actually, in 2000, 17, we didn't do one that year. And because we'd kind of come off of like a little bit of a rough one in 2016, it just didn't go the way we wanted it to. And so we were like, well, maybe we're not really, maybe it wasn't even that much, it wasn't really worth it. And so we went ahead and didn't do it. And what was interesting is we definitely saw a peak, but it was really interesting that even kind of the failure in 2016 of kind of the accounts we picked and the amounts that we picked, we still were able to see quite a bit of increase in 2016 over 17 without doing anything. So I would really encourage you, even if it's, you know, you start out small, you do come up with some type of tax settlement campaign, because I think that it's really important to increase the money that you're already going to get during tax season.
Definitely. Kelly, I got a question for you. How was your 2019 tax season compared to previous years?
It was good. It was, I think that it was a little on the lean side as well for us. And okay. I don't really know what it was. I think that, I guess maybe from my personal tax, experience, like right. because they had made some changes to the tax rules, mm-hmm. my refund and, you know, our household tax implications were a lot different. And mm-hmm. so I think that maybe people were, you know, kind of hesitant. Maybe they weren't getting quite as much. I mean, if you look mm-hmm. at the average a refund, it wasn't that much different, like from 2016, 17, 18, and even what they're expecting in 2019, it wasn't really that much different. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it. But that was kind of one of the experiences that we were having was that, you know, I think that might've affected it.
That's my belief as well. In the Boych household, the refund was not what it used to be. And it is my belief that there was less to go around during this past year. So it is in previous years, it was our belief that we really need to get started on our tax season planning as early as possible. And I would say to anyone participating in the webinar, any of our attendees, that if you're starting your planning in January, you're starting your planning too late. Start planning now. Get your reports, your data, start making that plan, get your budgets for your letters, and start making those plans so that you can really be effective while you're in the midst of tax season. Because when I started off as a collector many years ago, tax season really seemed to extend the full first quarter of the year and even partially into April. Now it seems like things are tailing off earlier than they used to be. And my assumption is that there are more people nowadays filing electronically, getting their refunds more quickly. So you have to get your letter, your communication in there quickly before the available funds are gone.
Absolutely. And I think that the stat may be a little off by a couple, but I think what it's like 13, a consumer has 13 other collection agencies contacting them mm-hmm. at any one time. And so you're competing with 13 other agencies for that tax refund.
Absolutely. So get your letters in there quickly, but not before JP Recovery Services. Okay.
Excellent start. Well, we've actually got a question already, so I'm going to use this as an opportunity to remind everybody that our webinar today is being sponsored by Solutions by Tax. And if you have a question, please type it in and we'll get it answered as best we can. Question, do you think that early filing by taxpayers is due to reduced ability to itemize for a lot of consumers?
Yeah, I think so. I also think that, Mark had said, was that the electronic filings, like, you know, it used to be just TurboTax, but I think like H&R Block has a product. Like there's several people out there that are offering like do-it-yourself taxes. And so I really think that this electronic filing just happens so quick and people really want that money. Like I know that, you know, in everybody's mind, like the people that owe taxes, April 15th is the due date, but I think that people are getting refunds. Like many people need to recover from Christmas, right? They overspent. And then also they have all these debts that are sitting here. So I think that people are just trying to get the money as quickly as possible.
Yeah. My assumption is that refunds are happening earlier because, everyone loves to use the millennials as an example. preference, filing preference. My parents are boomers. They are still doing their paper filing. But I have cousins, younger cousins, that are their millennials, and their preference is to file electronically. I think it has to do with consumer preference. And what we're seeing is that the millennials and the generation that are more comfortable with electronic filing are taking advantage of that. And that's why more of our consumers are getting their refunds earlier now.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, if there's sort of a difference in how different generations are filing, and maybe boomers are filing later because maybe it takes them a little longer to get through the paper, and millennials are filing earlier because they can do it online, do you recommend that agencies sort of look at the composition of their accounts and sort of segment or sort of stratify them in terms of how they're going to approach them with it, you know, with their tax settlement offers? Or is it better to just...
Granular if you were to do that.
Sure.
So here's what my suggestion would be. Regardless of the age of your consumer, I would recommend getting your letter in there as soon as possible. That's what I think the important thing is get the letter out there as quickly as you can, but get them out to the right people. So what we focused on is I know what my budget is for tax season letters. We have a special budget allocated to this most wonderful time of the year for collections. And I know what my budget is, and I've started pulling reporting. So we have in our environment a letter profitability report that attributes payments to a letter that was sent within so many days that we specify. And we have an idea by score segment. We utilize scoring, what the profitability will be by client, but then also by the scoring segment. And using that, we're utilizing a tiered approach where we're focusing on first ensuring that placements from those clients where we're going to see the greatest performance impact and a net for ourselves off of it are going to be lettered first. That's our first tier. Our next tier is to focus on those accounts where we're going to receive the greatest lift in client performance. And then also we're going to see net on our side, but our margins may be a little bit slimmer. After that are the accounts where we're going to see a lift in client performance. And then based on historical data, we may see a break even, possibly a slight loss off of those letters. But that's our third tier that we will get to only if we have the budget for it.
Now, one of the things, Mark, you mentioned, and maybe I'm just clarifying, or maybe it is, you just keep saying get your letter. I mean, are you sort of advocating maybe only sending one letter, or should it be sort of a more comprehensive campaign than that?
When we send out one letter to consumers. We don't letter the same consumer multiple times.
Okay. And then, but the content of that letter is sort of aimed at tax refund.
Yes.
Application. Okay. Got
yes,
it.
Yes, absolutely.
Kelly, does that sort of match what you've done in the past or what your plans are in terms of how you're going to promote or sort of get the word out about to your client or to your account?
Yeah, we send the one letter and then the collectors are, you know, pushing it pretty hard on every phone call. So, we also will do some calling campaigns based on those letters. So, you know, we've sent the letter, you know, 10 days later and then maybe 15 days later. So the idea is that we're making some additional phone calls. So if we get somebody on the line, we can say like, hey, your account qualified for a tax reduction. We'd like to help you out. And so really along with the one letter, like Mark's doing, we're also sending, we're making sure that those phone calls are followed up with those as well.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. At this point, I just want to pause the discussion briefly and say a few words about the sponsor for today's webinar, Solutions by Text. Solutions by Text, a division of Marketing Response Solutions, a privately held corporation whose primary focus is delivering critical information in an SMS format worldwide. Solutions by Text has developed a proprietary software designed to adhere to regulations within the mobile phone industry. Solutions by Text strives to develop a scalable solution with flexibility to meet industry changes in demand maintain a functional user interface with various user access options, build products delivering a clear, consistent value, and construct a suite of services matching the demands of the consumer. For more than 25 years, Solutions by Text has partnered with a variety of organizations and multiple industries to design and implement a diverse SMS solution. Solutions by Text customizes a suite of service to meet client requirements and maintain ease of use. For more information, please visit www.solutionsbytext.com. Thank you again to Solutions by Text for sponsoring today's webinar. Now let's pick up with our discussion again. Going back to the notion that everyone should kind of have their plans in place, you know, certainly I've done a lot of webinars this year. We've talked about the TCPA and text messaging and all of that. And the issue always sort of boils down to consent. Make sure you've got consent to call someone on their cell phone. Make sure you've got consent. Is that part of the preparations, or should that be part of the preparations at an agency leading up to tax time, is making sure that we're reaching out and getting that consent so that we can call them, we can maybe try and text message them as part of a tax settlement campaign?
Absolutely. I would say one of the strategies most that I've that makes the most sense to me in getting that opt-in, in particular for text messaging, is including that opt-in option on your letter. Whether it's your initial demand letter or maybe even your settlement letter as well. So if you're utilizing a text campaign, I would strongly recommend updating your letters to include that opt-in language. Again, many consumers, in particular millennials, younger consumers, prefer to do their business via text. And if you have that at your disposal, leverage it and communicate that to your consumers in the manner that's easiest for them to get a hold of it, whether it's by letter or having your agents opting them in for future communications. Even if you don't send a letter to a consumer, we have our agents where there's still the settlement option for them. It's just our agents need to communicate that during the phone call. And if you have, you make that contact, use that as an opportunity to opt in those consumers into text messaging.
You know, and the other thing that I was thinking about, like, and this kind of off the fly a little bit, but like I have a credit card with Chase. And so they often will send me letters and say, you've been qualified for a program. And then they make me go to their website to you know, figure out what that offer is. And I mean, I don't know if this would work for every agency, but I was thinking, like, you know, if there was an option for them to go to the website and maybe choose from one to three options for settling their account. And then along with that, you get the authorization for email and text. So like, you know, if you're trying to build up your text authorization and email authorization as we're coming into, you know, kind of the next year, that might be a good way to at least even just get the authorization. So maybe it's not going to be super, successful for your tax time, but it may help you continue to communicate with these consumers in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. For us, about 96% of what we work is medical. And typically with medical, we're not just getting one account for a patient. We're getting accounts, we'll get accounts, maybe five accounts at one time for a patient. And then maybe up to a year or 2 years later, we'll get another account for that same patient. So we get them to opt into text messaging, and then they can get that notification via text that there's been an add-on to their existing placement, or we can extend that settlement offer to them via text. That's what we're looking forward to being able to do with the text messaging campaigns.
Well, and, you know, and I think also the thing that you want to think about is that the collector's job right now, and actually sometime in October we start, is planting the seed. So we talk a lot about the collector saying, like, look, you know, we'll set you up on a temporary arrangement, but we really need to get this paid off by, you know, the end of January, tax time. One of your questions, Mike, was like non-financial incentives with consumers. So we use the non-financial incentives, like holding it off their credit report, you know, through tax season, like maybe through February or March. So these are payment arrangements we may have set up, you know, is temporary arrangements in October or November. So then the idea is that money then will come in. And we really didn't give them a deal. It was just a matter of negotiating, you know, holding it off their credit report while they made some small payments until they could pay it off with their tax return.
Yeah. We have we'll set up yes, our agents plant that seed, you know, at any time in the year where a consumer may not be able to afford to pay, let's say their $2,000 balance in five equal or four equal or three equal payments, whatever it may be. So our agents will set up this partial payment arrangement and then follow up with them again later after 6 months. And they plant that seed for the consumer that, you know, let's set up something now. And then perhaps around tax season, that may be an option for them. And we found that if a consumer makes an initial payment, you know, a down payment this month, that they are more likely to resolve that obligation at a later point. They're vested in the resolution of that account so that when your letter goes out, here's the opportunity that they have that you were talking about 6-7 months earlier.
And then the other thing that I found while I was kind of researching a little bit, getting ready for this, is that the TurboTax actually has like a website that you can estimate your tax return. So I think especially for people that don't have like an itemized tax return, like homeowners, things like that, they can actually go in and put in like information off their final pay stub and kind of get an idea of what they should be anticipating for tax return. And I think that might be a good option for collectors to kind of give the consumer like, hey, let's go on this website real quick and let's put in this information so we can kind of ID what you might be getting back. And that might help us qualify you for a settlement or resolution of the account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good.
Is that something you think you're going to try, Kelly?
I thought it might be good. We're a little bit different than Mark. We do like maybe 30 or 40% medical. The rest of ours is like deficiency balances, credit cards. We do a lot of property management, tow bills, things that like people need to pay off because they're affecting their credit report, but not necessarily like the medical side of it, right? So for us, like the property management accounts are the ones that get paid off most during tax time because they use their tax return to pay off their previous property management debt, and then they can move because a lot of times they can't move till that debt's paid off. So we really hit our property management bills pretty hard during this time because we know, and oftentimes we don't really have to negotiate much of a settlement, maybe some interest, but we often don't even have to cut into our clients' balances to get those resolved because people are so motivated to pay them.
Okay, excellent. Another question has come in, so let's ask that. Our office does a credit union settlement campaign for a reduction of the principal balance. Some of our other types of clients, we offer half off the interest. What kinds of settlement offers do you offer? Do you have a date that you normally send out your settlement letters?
So I guess I can take part of this. So one of the things with our credit union settlements, and this is something that we kind of dealt with in the past, is that 1099 requirement. So, you know, depending, and I know that there's been some talk over the years about like what kind of language is in your settlement letter. So one of the things on my list of like what you're doing to like prepare would be to definitely get an attorney approved letter. So like whatever letter you decide, make sure you've had your attorney review it. And if there needs to be a requirement of any 1099, if you write off too much on the debt, then there's going to be tax implications for those consumers or maybe. So just something for kind of like a heads up on the credit union debt. And then I would say like letters should be going out. Like, I don't know about you, Mark, but we usually send them about the first 3 to 4 days of January.
Oh yeah, definitely. If you're sending them middle of January, end of January, you're sending them too late. Letters need to go out as quickly as they could possibly go out. We don't start obviously until January, starting in December. We had talked about trying to send them out in December, but the end of the year, is it in the budget? So we really hold off until the very beginning of January. So we're making our preparations already. As far as discounts or offers that we can make to people. So on our legal, we don't accrue interest on our medical accounts. And again, about 95%, 96% of what we work is medical. Our clients don't want us to accrue interest on pre-judgment accounts, but on post-judgment accounts where our clients do allow us to file a lawsuit and that post-judgment interest rate has been awarded, actually throughout the year, we will offer to consumers, or our attorney network will offer to consumers essentially a settlement where the attorney is offering to remove the post-judgment interest or not collect the post-judgment interest that's accrued on the account. We're still collecting our costs that we paid and the principal, but we're flexible in terms of the post-judgment interest collecting on that. Another nice thing about civil litigation, it depends on the state, but many of our clients are based in the Great Lakes area, and Michigan is, here's my plug for Michigan, Michigan has a post-judgment option where you can put in a state income tax GARN if you have a judgment. It's relatively inexpensive. I think it costs $21, and the state of Michigan, once you get your garnishment in time, will allocate any refund, state refund that consumer may have to paying off the judgment that you've obtained. And so that's a very useful tool we found for Michigan. I don't know if there are similar tools in other states, such as a state income tax GARN, but I do know that Michigan is special in that regard for us and what we can do post judgment.
I'd say that's very special. Where I live in California, they don't let us do anything here. So, and then also, Adam, to your point, so some of our clients will negotiate all the way down to 50%. So depending on kind of the type of client, sometimes what we'll do is we'll offer a higher offer in the letter, but the collector has some flexibility if they can qualify for something less. And that kind of alludes to the fact in our letter is like, you know, even if you don't think that this settlement will work for you, please call us. We may be able to qualify you for something different. So that's one of those things that we kind of use to work with the consumer, because really the goal is just to get them to pick up the phone. Because even if they're not able to do the settlement offer, we're trying to get permission to leave messages, cell phones, you know, all the fun stuff. Also maybe employment if we want to initiate legal action, if they're not willing to make payments with us. So really our goal is to increase those volume of phone calls. One of the other things that I want you to think about is even if like you're panicking, like right now, you're like, I'm not going to be able to get this tax settlement off, do something. And one of the things that we talk about is we tell the collectors, like 9 out of 10 consumers are going to get their tax return in 21 days because of those electronic filings. So we tell them like, okay, look, you can qualify them verbally for a settlement and give them 21 days. And especially if you're talking to them, you know, the first week of January, giving them 21 days, you're still going to get that money before the end of the January or end of February, what have you. So that's one of those things that we really talk about with the consumers is like, go file your taxes right now. I'll leave this offer open for, you know, 25 days so that you can get it paid. And that seems to really motivate the consumers to hurry up and get their taxes filed. And then more importantly, they think we're working with them, right? They're like, oh, this agency's willing to wait for this money. They're really trying to help me out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many of our clients, if your clients aren't aware of the importance of tax season, take an opportunity to educate them on the importance of it. And, you know, some of us may have clients that don't consider settlements, blanket settlements. Maybe they would do so during tax season. Many of our larger hospital systems have more sophisticated revenue cycle personnel that are already familiar with bad debt and the tactics that we utilize in particular during tax season. But some of them, smaller hospital systems, are not. It's in some cases, it's been a matter of us reaching out to them and saying, hey, there's an opportunity here. Here's what we were thinking. And here's historically how we've performed for other clients and what the returns are and what we've seen. And we sell the client on considering a settlement or considering a lower than their typical blanket settlement authority. So work with your clients, educate them on it as well and where the opportunity is during the season.
And Mark, I would say that like if you have a client that you're trying to close, like maybe you've already kind of started to build a relationship or having trouble getting the accounts away from them, one of the things that I would think might work really well is if you already have a tax program established or maybe even something that you think is, you know, pretty well put together, Make it up now, I guess. But what I think you could do is go in there and say, hey, give me your second placements. Let me run this through my proven tax program. And I think I can recover quite a bit of money for you on these second placements. Like, you know, give me a sampling. Let me take these accounts away from your other collection agency. And I think that there's an opportunity for you to get your foot in the door with something you know, like this and trying to at least show maybe a newer client how you can recover some money for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also think there's some opportunity without really losing any money for you is we've motivated our clients to negotiate their balances. So I'll have a client say, oh yeah, you could take like 10 or 15% off. And I'm like, no, we need to make this sound like a deal. I mean, like I need 25, 30, 40% to get these accounts recovered, especially based on like what kind of, you know, a paper, or what kind of accounts they are. So sometimes we'll reduce the commission by, you know, 3 to 5%. So it's not really going to lose me that much money if I'm going to be collecting some. And so we've done that to kind of motivate the clients to participate in our program.
Yeah, another method that we've utilized with the client is aggregating the settlement authority. So what they'll do is say, they'll say in total of the accounts that you settle within a month, in total that needs to come out to 50%, let's say. So you may have settlements where, you know, the collectors will work with each other to negotiate settlements. And so you'll have one account where maybe the settlement was 40%, but then you'll have another account where it was 70%. But when you aggregate that together, it ends up, okay, so month to date, we're at 60% settlement total. So that's another method that you can use to sell clients on settlement campaigns. Some clients are genuinely surprised when you go back to them and say, look, 5% is a start, but I don't think that that's going to motivate people.
Yeah. You must work with the same clients I do sometimes.
It's possible. Yeah.
Let's change gears for a couple of minutes. We've talked a lot about sort of the outreach to the consumers and the individuals and working with clients internally. You know, like I can remember way back when I was talking to a guy who ran a mortgage company, and it was the middle of a refinance boom, and I was talking about hiring more staff, and he gave me a quote that I remember to this day, and it's like, I'm not going to build the church just for Christmas. So I'm curious to sort of get a sense for how you alter your employee, your hours, your staffing levels, overtime, things like that, just to sort of accommodate for this expected increase in volume and traffic.
So we don't hire additional FTE. We have not found that it has been necessary to do so. In particular, so most of what you're getting, think about it, is you're sending settlement offers via mail. And those consumers are going to call in, or they're going to mail in their payment. We'll see an increase in mail communication, but then also call traffic as well. But we have an inbound IVR, and that IVR is capable of accepting that settlement payment from the consumer. So we haven't found that it's been necessary to build that church during Christmas. We found that we've been able to effectively manage our inbound volume of mail or phone calls with the staff that we have.
Yeah, I think Mark's got a point that, you know, pointing them in the right direction. So making sure the consumer knows that the IVR, the web payment, that this is really the best way to pay us and get the account recovered, you know, resolved quickly. So making sure that that's kind of the message of your letter, you know, obviously have your phone number and your address there. But I really think that it's important for your letter to drive the consumer where you want them to go. And then the other thing that's, you know, we've used in the past is just inbound agents. I can train an inbound agent pretty quickly. Mostly they're doing transfer work, but they can take a payment, right? If somebody's calling in like, hey, I want to pay the settlement, that's easy to train somebody. And then if it requires negotiation, then they would transfer it to the staff, the more senior staff members. And so that's a good way to, like, you can bring them on part-time, pay them less than your collectors, no commission. And really they're just there. And we actually have two full-time inbound agents that are great for our office. One of them does like auditing. The other one makes a few outbound calls and some skip trace work. And then they just field our calls and get them where they need to go. And it's really taken that inbound work off of the collectors and really helps me direct the traffic where I want to go. So if I have accounts that I don't want my, you know, higher paid collectors touching, then those inbound agents aren't sending those calls to them.
Yeah, one of the greatest sources of angst for our collectors were when there were two milestones, and it was implementing our IVR. So consumers could make payments by phone without actually interacting with an agent, and then also the implementation of our web portal. So the consumers can just go online if they so choose. So if you have those tools at your disposal, leverage them, you know, and we put that in our letter. We have a banner off to the side on our letter. You can now pay by phone. Our IVR is available 24/7, or here's our web address. You can make a secure payment here. So leverage those tools if you have them. If you don't, consider, look into them. They're very useful. They can help you reduce your salary and wage costs, but still without a reduction in fee in the end.
And my win last night was I opened my IVR and the payment amount was $9,432. And I pull up the account. It's not owned by anybody. So there's, you know, the $9,000 is 100% the office. So,
yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and that's, I think that pro with the IVR is something where, you know, you're getting that money and that consumer never talked to our office. You know, we've made attempts to reach them, but they've never talked to our office, but now the money's paid.
Absolutely. Useful tool. One of my favorite collectors is the initials IVR.
Yeah. I like that one.
I'm curious, if you're not changing your staffing levels, do you make any changes with respect to, I don't know, allowing overtime hours or more hours worked or anything sort of within, you know, what the employees can do in terms of how much they're working during tax time?
You know, I pick up my like evenings and weekends a little bit more. So traditionally we work two Saturdays a month. And what was interesting is for a while we hadn't been working the Saturdays and we picked it back up. I think, what month is it? I guess in about August we picked it back up. And what's interesting is my phones are ringing off the hook on Saturdays. Like the other day, like I can't remember, we forgot to turn the phones on for Saturday. And then I flipped them on like a half hour after we'd been here. And they just like would not stop. And so I really think that, like, you know, if you're not already working Saturdays or evenings, I really think you should be considering it. Consumers just are working the 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and they really need that extra time to take care of stuff. So, you know, staggered shifts might be a good way to avoid overtime. Like California and overtime with a commission or bonus paid employee is really sketchy. So, you know, for our office, we don't do overtime for our collectors, but I definitely do staggered shifts. I also have like a lot of parents that right now have like sick kids, right, Mike? And then, appointments. I've got people that want to do Christmas shopping. So they do like a comp time, 4 hours off during the week, and then they work Saturday for 4 hours. And that's a huge amount of help for the staff. They really appreciate that, especially during the holidays. And then it benefits me because we can handle those calls on the off hours.
Yeah. It's interesting. Kelly, you and I have we have different approaches now. We have not worked Saturdays in quite some time. We have not seen a drop off in our performance as a result of it. So the takeaway from that would say it depends on your agency. If you're not doing it, if you've never tried working Saturdays or late nights, give it a try and see how it works out for you. We were working Saturdays for years, many times. And then I want to say maybe 3 years ago, we started looking into it and said, are we really realizing a benefit from this? And we realized that we weren't. So we stopped working Saturdays, and it resulted in a lift in morale, and it helps us in our hiring practices as well. However, we do still mandate 2 late nights per week for our associates. But we have flexible scheduling. So our associates, they have to work 2 late nights per week. We specify that, but we allow them to come and go as they please. So if they come in, they're here for an hour and 45 minutes and they say, you know what, today's not the day, they can take off. They just got to get their 40 hours in before the end of the week. And it works out well for us. There are still some restrictions on it. Obviously, got to get your 40 hours in for the week. If you're having problems getting those hours in, then there are consequences for that as well. We may take you off of that schedule. But by doing that, we haven't seen an increase or a wild fluctuation in our abandon rates or in our contact rates.
That's interesting. Yeah. And I, you know, and Mark, we had stopped doing the Saturdays. And one of the things, like, for California, like, we know that the summer months on Saturdays are not super successful. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it, they, people take off too early in the day to go do whatever they do. And so we find that, you know, August, September, October, like these months, the Saturdays are much more successful. And so that's the reason why we kind of turn it off and on throughout the year.
I got you.
Because of that. So I agree with you. You really should try it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and also I think that a Saturday is much more successful if the collectors all week long are, everybody that says, oh, I'm at work, I can't talk, says, we're here Saturday, 8 to 12, call us. Because not everybody's going to call back, but some do. And so that's really the other part of that, is the collectors really have to communicate with the consumers that we are open and ready for their calls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Do either of you change your incentive plans, either commission structures, bonuses, financial, or, you know, sort of the non-financial stuff, days off, parking spaces, you know, pizza parties, things like that?
I offer to give up my parking space for holiday. No, so what we do is we realize that tax season is, that's where we're going to make much more than we usually do. We actually adjust our agents' goals based on seasonality. So it's not so much an incentive, but more of a challenge to our agents. And they know it too. There, many of our agents have been out here more than 1 year. So they know that tax season is when things are really paying. So we do increase our goals during the first quarter of the year to compensate that for that. But as things kind of thin out, toward the summer months, we lower our goals for our agents in recognition of that. We realize that we're not going to make as much during those leaner times as we will during tax season. As far as incentive plans, really, during tax season, we don't change our incentive plans. Our incentive plans are based on what we're trying to change in our agents. So one of our incentive plans right now for our agents, our bonus money that we're handing out for contests is incenting people to start collecting earlier in the month rather than waiting until the last week. That has been one of the sources of angst for us for quite some time. We want to lift recoveries earlier in the month. Don't wait until the last week. So we've been recently building our incentives for our agents around that, where we'll pay out more in contest money, as we call it, for collections earlier in the month rather than waiting till the end of the month.
We've played, we're playing games around here. I don't know that we really work. And I have one that, like, it's kind of like a daily goal contest that we've played. And I put little envelopes on the wall and they say tax return. And so if you reach your, you know, if you're the one that reaches the goal for the day or the top collector of the day, whatever the goal is for that day, and kind of like Mark, it's usually focused a little bit on like what we're struggling with. And so then they can pull a tax return off the wall, and it would be like either some cash or we're don't tell anyone, we give away like gift cards and scratchers and all those types of things too. So so that they get their tax return early is kind of the idea and motivating factor here.
Excellent. Okay. As a reminder, if you got a question for Kelly or Mark, please enter it in now. We've only got a few minutes left before we wrap up. Also remind everybody again that today's webinar is being sponsored by Solutions by Tech, so thanks to them. Mark, you mentioned this before, and we did spend a couple of minutes talking about it, but the interaction with clients, I'm guessing, you know, by the conversation you had earlier, it should have started by now in terms of settlement offers and things like that, but let's say it hasn't. You know, how do you sort of, oops, my bad, I should have mentioned this earlier. You know, how do you sort of approach that conversation if you haven't had it already?
Well, there's still plenty of time left in December. Reach out to your clients let them know, make them aware of it. I was at a client visit yesterday. They're a member of one of the members of their revenue cycle team worked in the RM industry as a branch manager. So he's aware of the importance of tax season. He had a lot of questions about what our plan was, and we explained that to him. But again, not every hospital system that we have is as sophisticated in the revenue cycle operations as other clients. So to, you know, as soon as you get off the call here, reach out to your clients, send an email out to them. And let them know this is where the opportunity is to really improve the recoveries. This is, so let's take advantage of it and let's negotiate a rate that you can offer to these consumers during tax season. Our clients, I think Kelly mentioned that they have clients that offer special tax season rates. Our clients do that as well because they're aware of it, and clients that aren't aware of it, give them that option, educate them on it, and they may take to it. They may be interested in it.
And, you know, and one of the things that we do is we make the authorization for settlement like authority from the client. We have them sign a special like addendum to their contract, but we send it out like an invite. So we send it out kind of like, hey, you know, we've identified your accounts to, qualified in our program. We'd like you to participate in this campaign. And so we kind of make it look like you're a special client that has been selected for this, that we don't do it for every client, because obviously we can't send letters for all of our clients during tax season. So we really try to make it look like a kind of like an exclusive offer for our clients as well. And I think that it helps sell it a little bit more.
You mean you don't have the infinite tax season letter budget?
No, it's weird, huh?
That's odd. That's very odd.
We got it. And, but the clients love it. I like every client that I've had, really appreciate, I think, having that opportunity to increase their recovery. And then, if you can increase your recovery during tax season, when they want to know what you're doing, like, at the end of next year, that really is going to boost your overall numbers for your recovery for your client. And I think that's the other part of this is that in the, fine, you're going to help your bottom line, but really it's going to make you look better throughout the year. And I think that's important as well.
Absolutely. That, I'm glad you brought that up. One of the clients that we're in a highly competitive situation with was what we were finding through trending is that our competition is getting off to a much stronger start in the first quarter of the year, and that we're catching up to them, but the rest of the year is spent playing catch up to them. So with the idea that, well, first quarter of the year, that's tax season, we take a look at our letter effort for that client. We were finding that it wasn't as strong as it is for other high priority clients. So this past tax season, we invested more letter effort during tax season for that client. And as a result, we did not spend the year playing catch up. We've spent our time pulling ahead of the other agency now.
Absolutely. And Mike, I don't know if now is a good time. I wanted to backstep a little bit. I had some notes that I don't know that I really went over was like when you're planning for tax income season. And one of the things that I really think that an agency needs to look about is like kind of like how they're targeting which consumers they're reaching out to. So some of the notes that I kind of made for myself were demographics, also your type of debt. You know, I mean, if you're all medical, I guess you're reaching out to your medical clients, but you know, what clients do you have to offer settlements for? So like our property management clients, like I said, we're going to get those accounts paid regardless, right? Many of them paid regardless. So we really have to look at like maybe not offering as large of a settlement on that as we would maybe like a tow bill or something where consumers might not pay, as motivated to pay. The other thing is the credit bureaus all have products. I think it was Experian. I was looking at their website, have products that really, I think the way that I understood it was they're like scoring people based on how much debt they paid off during last tax season and the tax season before that. So I think that maybe looking at a product like that, maybe not for this tax season, but maybe moving forward is an idea to say like, okay, maybe the bureaus have some analytics that you could use to try to help identify which of those consumers you really do want to contact.
Those are all really smart points, Kelly. With medical debt in particular, like I mentioned earlier, we're not just typically getting one account for a patient. We're getting multiple accounts, and the scoring that we use, that we utilize, actually adjusts based on whether or not the consumer has paid us previously. So we rely heavily on our scoring when identifying those patients that we want to send our letter to.
Absolutely. And then the other thing is like balance. So one of the things I read was that the average tax return is for this coming year is $2,833. So I also think that like looking at your balance range is really important, knowing that on average, this is about what people are going to get back. So that I think will also kind of help you. And then I guess just the one cautionary tale is out of statutes debt. So being really cautious about like how far old you go back, and if you are mailing tax settlement letters to old accounts, that you have the proper verbiage. I personally don't think that the older ones are really where the money's at. I think really it's, you know, the sweeter spot is more like about a year old or less, is where we really find the most return, because it's fresh enough in the consumer's mind that they still kind of have this feeling that I want to make this go away.
Yeah. If you're the secondary or tertiary agency for a client, consider the fact that this consumer has been through one or two other agencies, not to mention possibly letters from the client, and they've weathered a couple of tax seasons. So maybe sending those settlement offer letters on your secondary or tertiary placements is not the best place to start.
Yeah.
That was a question I was going to ask you, Mark. You had mentioned getting, you know, accounts from the same people sort of, you know, years later. And I was curious if you sort of went back and looked at a payment history and said, oh, this person paid during tax time a couple of years ago. Let's make sure that, you know, when we score them, that sort of factors into, you know, where they come up in our, you know, in our campaigns.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. It's the adjustment to the score is done automatically when a payment is received. So we can focus on, all right, we know the score range, or we utilize it's called Ultimate Analytics, where they assign a metal score to the account. So that metal score for that patient may increase as a result of their previous payments. And our logic that we have set up will identify, it's kind of set in that we know, all right, we want to metal our, or we want to letter our platinum accounts. And those accounts that have previously paid, maybe prior to that payment, were scored as like a silver or a gold. And now because they made that payment, they're in the platinum category.
Well, and I think that, like, you know, even if you're not where Mark is with like the scoring product already up and running, I think that it's pretty easy to, you know, pull the information from your system to see, like, you know, they have 10 accounts, they've paid 6 of them off. I think you can also pull like all accounts that qualify, like have had payments between January and April. I mean, so I think that, you know, Mark's sophistication is really important as you move forward, and maybe something to think about for next year. But even on a short term, like, hey, I want to get this running, I want to send something out this year, you know, running small reports like that, I think would be really helpful for even a smaller agency that doesn't have that up and running yet.
That was giving me my next question, is where an agency that, you know, if they were just sort of getting started in scoring or really weren't sure what to look at, you know, where they should kind of, you know, take those first few steps to help them prioritize which accounts they want to reach out to.
And I also think that you're going to need to look at like your age range. Like, you know, I don't send very many tax settlement letters to people that are over 50. You know, it's, you know, the likelihood of them working is less. I mean, I know we have lots of people that are over 50 in the workforce, but I also know that like if I'm dealing with medical debt and people are over 50, chances are they may not be working because of, you know, medical issues. And so those are the other kind of things that we think about when we're looking at our accounts, is, you know, what's the age range? You know, do I have employment information? You know, if I have active employment information and maybe I'm looking at legal action as an option, that would be somebody I'd want to send a tax settlement letter to see if I can get it paid before having to initiate legal action.
Do you look at, you know, if you've had an account, you know, for either the similar debt or, you know, the same debt, you know, or whatever, I sent them an offer, didn't get a call, or got a call, didn't get a payment. Do you sort of look at, factors beyond whether or not you got a payment or an arrangement in terms of, you know, what you sent them and in order to make any adjustments that you might make, that you might need to make this year to get sort of make further progress with them? Or is that, you know, to your point earlier, Mark, is that just getting too granular at that point?
So I think that what's helped with us is getting a sense of, because we work medical, the patients, typically those patients live in the area around the hospital. So you get a sense of, for us, what kind of, and we get a sense of what kind of areas are we lettering. So we'll take a look at that as well. Like, we'll have a hospital system that has many different hospitals or facilities, but we'll know that there's a particular facility that we really shouldn't, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for us to invest a lot of letter effort in, because we're not going to get the return on that. So you get a sense, even without scoring, you'll get a sense from, I would imagine just about everybody's got access to a batch track report. You know, if you're working medical and you've got a client that has a couple of facilities, you get a sense of what's the higher liquidating facility and where am I going to focus my letter effort on based on that, that historical liquidation. So those are another things that you can take a look at.
Okay. Excellent. Final reminder, last chance to get your questions in. Only got a couple minutes left. If you have any other questions for clarification or other ideas that you want to run by Kelly or Mark, this is probably your last and best chance to get them in. We talked a little bit about it, but sort of looking ahead to the 2020 tax year, you know, I'll ask each of you to do your best, you know, impersonation of, you know, look into the crystal ball. And are there any signs or any expectations that you think next year is going to be better or worse than what we've seen in the past, either this year or the past couple of years?
I'm hopeful that it'll, you know, I'm hopeful that it'll continue to increase. Like, I think Mark and I both said that last year was a little bit stale, you know, a little bit slower or staler than we both would have liked. I know that what we're dealing with in California a little bit is like, we kind of came out of the recession and now the house prices are going through the roof. And I think there's a lot of people that are trying to clear up their credit, waiting for another crash to try to like jump into the house market. So we're finding that quite a few people are still calling in trying to clean up credit and get accounts resolved so they can buy homes. And so I really think that a tax return time is kind of that time that people are thinking about that, buying homes, moving, like renting new places. And so all of these things, you know, if we can tap into those people, I think that you're going to continue to have an increase in your recovery during tax season year over year.
I'm taking a less optimistic approach. because there hasn't been any type of change in tax law that I would anticipate that would increase the refund, I anticipate, much like this past year, a kind of a leaner, tax season for us. So what we're doing, in anticipation of that, is we're managing our costs associated. We're going to do a much better job than we did this past year of managing our costs, our letter costs, and I've developed this tiered strategy where we're focusing, yes, on getting that client performance lift, but the also in that first tier is what clients or what scores are going to get us the net return quickly that we need. So we're taking the more cautious approach. If and when things change in tax law, we anticipate an increase in refunds, then we may get a little more liberal with our letter strategies.
Well, if we add a glass half full and a glass half empty, we get a full glass. So I'm going to look at it that way.
Yeah. sorry to be the downer.
No. Hey, look, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with a little realism in a little sort of looking at it, you know, from both sides here. So I appreciate that. With that, we've just about run out of time. So, but before I let everyone go, Mark, Kelly, this was an awesome conversation. I really enjoyed listening to both of you. Really appreciate the time and the insights that you shared. This was a really great conversation. And I know, judging by how many people stayed on for the duration of the webinar, that a lot of people are walking away with some great information. So thank you very much. Also want to thank Solutions by Text one more time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.solutionsbytext.com to learn more about the company. A final reminder to please take a minute and fill out the feedback survey. Once it pops up on your screen or when you get the email, a recording of this event will be posted to the webinar recordings page on accountsrecovery.net probably by tomorrow morning. So take a look out for that. Be sure to listen to it because I'm sure there's probably some great ideas you missed. And I hope everyone stays tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Kelly, Mark, awesome job. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting us. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, everybody. Have a great day and a great holiday. But I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
Happy holidays.